So that's part of God's story. See, the family of God and the people God chooses to use, we might refer to them as the heroes of faith. But they didn't always make good decisions. And they didn't always have it all together. And at this point in the story, especially, it's looking pretty bleak. Imagine you're in Isaac and Rebecca's shoes, and you're watching your two kids just battle it out and be at odds with one another. Or imagine you're Esau, deprived of his blessing and his birthright, and completely consumed with bitterness and rage to the point where he wants to murder his brother. Or put yourself in Jacob's shoes. He's finally got all that he thought he wanted, but yet he's on the run for his life, and he's separated and isolated from his family. But the good news is that God can still use these less than perfect people in these less than ideal situations. And it's certainly something we see in Jacob's story. Let's take a look at names for a moment. What's in a name? So names of people and places in the Bible often have deep meanings and come into play in their story. How many of you know what your name means? Anyone want to share what your name means? Want to share? Yep. Priest? Priest town? Okay. Anyone else? Drew, you want to share yours? Manly. Anyone else? So my name, Amy, means beloved. And I didn't always care for my name. I thought it was too short, too common. But who can argue with a name like that? Beloved. Makes you feel so nice. And I remember the weight of choosing names when our kids were born. We wanted something that sounded nice, but also something that had a depth of meaning so that they might know the prayers that we had for them and the desires that we had for them. And so we chose a name that meant God is gracious, and one that meant the Lord is my God. And that's our prayer for our kids, that they would know God's grace in their life and that they'll be able to say the Lord is my God through every situation, through every season of their life. So we hope that we've instilled that into them as we raise them. But there was a time where our son didn't even know his own name. When he was very young, we called him Bubba. That was his nickname given by his sister. And we did it too often to the point where we'd say, is your name Elias? And he'd say, Bubba. So we had to start using his real name. But now he knows it, and hopefully he knows the depth of meaning in his name. But, yeah, so let's look at the names in this story. There we go. So Jacob, his name means heel grasper, or he deceives. And to deceive someone means to trick them into believing something that's not true, usually in order to get something for yourself. And Jacob definitely lived up to his name. He went through that first part of his life scheming and deceiving and grasping selfishly for the things that he wanted. And where did that leave him? Well, he got what he wanted. He got the birthright, he got the blessing, but he immediately had to run for his life, leaving his family and his homeland isolated and alone. Is this the type of hero that we're supposed to learn from? But the good news is that God uses those unlikely heroes. Or maybe the anti-hero, which means a central character in a story who lacks conventional heroic attributes. So that's the good news, that God chooses us sometimes when we don't fit the bill, when we don't look like that hero. One of the unexpected yet beautiful things about God's story is that he chooses us. And it's not really about what we can do, our own strength and power. but it's about giving our lives over to him. Because see, we're not really the hero of our story. God is. He's the hero of this story, and he's the hero of our story. When we turn our lives over to God and let him rule, it changes everything. He was able to take that lying, deceiving, heel-grasping Jacob and welcome him into his story. But he didn't leave him there to keep making the same mistakes over and over again, to keep breaking those relationships and causing pain. He renamed Jacob. There's a scene in Jacob's story where he literally wrestles with God. He's up all night wrestling with God, and God asks him his name. And if you remember back when he was getting the blessing from his father Isaac, his father asked him his name, and he said, "My name is Esau." He deceived and he lied and went by the wrong name. But in this case, when he's wrestling with God, he's finally understood and he's finally owns up to his real name. He says, "My name is Jacob," and he owns up to all that that means. And in that moment, God gives him a new name. In Genesis 32:28, it says, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." And this name, Israel, means he struggles with God, but it also can mean let God prevail. And I love that meaning for it. Let God prevail. To prevail means to be more powerful or victorious. It means to become widespread and current, or to persuade one to do something. I think that part especially is interesting, the persuasion. Jacob had those skills of persuasion when he deceived and he schemed, but he's gotten to the point now where he's letting God do that. He's turning that over to him, and now he's letting God prevail in his life. And when we turn our lives over to God and let him prevail, let him be victorious in our lives, let him be persuasive in our lives, everything changes. So messing up does not disqualify you from doing great things for God. In fact, God can use those very bad situations, the very worst things that you go through in life, to shape you and mold you and prod you on toward growth. Just this week, Drew shared this with me on Facebook. It says, "Jacob lied, Moses murdered, Saul hunted down Christians, David killed a man so that he could marry his wife, Peter disowned Jesus, but God used every single one of these people to build his kingdom." So you're never too far gone for God to use you. So don't let the devil steal your story, let Christ rewrite it. And that's what he did with Jacob's story. God met him in the bad situation, in the midst of his struggle. So let's look back at that scene. He's just flown away, run away from his family. He's in the midst of the struggle. He's in the middle of nowhere. The Bible said he's actually sleeping with a stone as his pillow. And there he has a dream from God. And in it, he hears God telling him this. In Genesis 28, it says, "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac." He's reminding him that that blessing, that promise is still there. "I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west and the east and the north and the south." That same blessing of the stars in the sky, the sand on the seashore, that uncountable blessing. "And all the people will be blessed through you and your offspring. I am with you, and I will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to the land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised." And then when Jacob woke up, as I was rereading Jacob's story, this is the line that really struck me. It says, "Surely the Lord is in this place." This place that he was in at this time was not a very good place, right? He's alone. He's abandoned. He feels abandoned, separated from his family. But God reminds him that the Lord is in this place. God persevered. He didn't abandon Jacob. He didn't take away his promise and his blessing. He was still there. He was promising to rewrite that ending of Jacob's story to be more than he could hope or imagine. You know, there have been times in my life where I've felt in a place like that, where everything I've hoped for and dreamed for has fallen flat. And I can tell you that there's comfort in those words, that God is in this place. So whatever place you're in today, recognize that God is in this place. And there's something deeper that's always at play. And we can live blessed and recognizing God's presence and his redemptive work when we hand that over to him. So God chooses unlikely heroes and often uses their struggles and the messiness and low points of their lives to get their attention. But then he rewrites their story and he redeems their story. And he can do that for us too if we let him prevail in our lives. That's exactly what he did in Jacob's story. So after years of molding and shaping Jacob, years separated from his family, Jacob returns to the land of his family and he prepares to meet his brother. So he's still afraid for his life. He sends a message to tell Esau that he's coming, and he receives a message back that Esau immediately gathered 400 men to come and meet him. So Jacob's a little bit scared right now. he's thinking, like, he's bringing an army against me. The first service I had the Lee brothers come up and act this out for me. Do I have any volunteers to be Jacob and Esau? All right, we'll just imagine. So they remember when we last met them, Jacob was running for his life. Esau was ready to kill him. And so we can think about what's going through Jacob's mind as he's coming. He's scared. He's thinking that he's going to finally get what he deserved back then. But he doesn't run away. He doesn't try to lie and scheme and fix the situation to his benefit. We see a complete rewriting of the character of Jacob. He comes humbly, offering gifts and bowing before Esau. And now Esau, we didn't get to see much of what happened in those years when Jacob was away from him. But it seems like God has been working in his heart too, because he didn't take that opportunity to get his revenge. His character is completely rewritten as well. Instead of being bitter and enraged, we see forgiveness and love. In Genesis 3:33-4, a beautiful scripture. It says, Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around him, around his neck, and kissed him, and they wept. Isn't that just a gorgeous picture of reconciliation and redemption? So Jacob and Esau went on to live in peace. The Bible talks about their descendants and the great nations that came from them. And we also see that their father, Isaac, got a happy ending too. He was on his deathbed earlier, but apparently he was able to live for many more years, because in Genesis 35:29, it says that at the end of his life, Isaac, full of years, breathed his last, and his sons, Esau and Jacob, buried him. So Isaac got to see the family reunited with forgiveness and redemption reigning. So it may take time, but forgiveness and redemption are always possible with God's love and grace. He can redeem even the messiest of situations. So that's what I want to leave you with today, that no matter what you've done or where you find yourself, you're not disqualified. God still changes names, and he still rewrites our stories and redeems those broken places in our lives when we let him prevail.